D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you, talking Titans. The NFL trade deadline is November 4th. The Titans play 5 games before the NFL trade deadline at the Cardinals, at the Raiders, home to the Patriots, at the Colts, and home to the Chargers. And we are talking a story in Sports Illustrated, which suggested one trade that every NFL team should make before the deadline in roughly a month. And here are the trades that involve Titans players. Jeffrey Simmons to the Bears for a second-round pick. Legarius Sneed to the Rams for a conditional third-round pick. Arden Key to the Niners for a sixth-round pick. Tony Pollard to the Commanders for a fifth-round pick. Your reaction, 615-737-1025. Let's start this hour by going to Mike on our phone line. He's been waiting patiently. Mike, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, guys, I'd like to ask a question that nobody seems to be asking, is that if we do all these trades coming up in about a month, what is Cam Ward going to say? Does he say, you know what, I came to Tennessee, I'm the number one pick, and now I'm in this massive chaos. Do I have a right to go somewhere else? Maybe I just don't want to play here anymore. I mean, is he under any type of long-term contract? I don't think he is. And with all this chaos going on here in Tennessee, I do believe that we need to trade up for higher picks. But I guarantee you, Cam Ward right now is saying, I'm never going to see a Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen contract ever the way it's going here in Tennessee. And I'm just wondering, what if he comes out and says, I don't want to play here anymore?
Thank you for the call, Mike. Cam Ward, his rookie contract is worth $48.7 million over 4 seasons. So just keep that in mind. But
it's really 6 seasons.
But that's true. Let's just discuss the general point that Mike wanted to make. How would you feel if all of these hypothetical trades happened? If you were Cam Ward, because another caller said it in the first hour, you know, the Titans would be putting Cam Ward in an even more disadvantageous position if they were to trade their best defensive player and a starting corner and an edge rusher and the starting running back. So it would be tougher for Cam Ward. But I also, you guys tell me if you think I'm off base when I say this, Cam Ward also had to understand that when you are the number one overall pick, now there are situations where the pick gets traded and you go to a team that isn't the worst team in the NFL. But when you are the number one overall pick in a draft, regardless of sport, you are going to a bad team. Mm-hmm. And bad teams usually do not transform overnight. So Cam Ward had to know, coming into this situation, that it was going to be a hard road to start. So let's answer that question, Willie and Derek. How would you feel if you were Cam Ward and these hypothetical trades happened and Jeffrey Simmons and Legarius Sneed and Arden Key and Tony Pollard went out the door the next month?
I would feel as if the organization is trying to win.
You have the opposite feeling that the caller did.
Yeah, I did, because you look at the players there, they would be parting from. All these guys really are aging players. These are guys outside of Jeffrey Simmons. How many of these guys are going to be, you know, part of the next iteration of the Tennessee Titans once they go into that next, their new building? The guys that you're talking about, I would almost bet, outside of Jeffrey Simmons, 99% of them will be gone next year. The only person that may still be here is Legarius Sneed, and that's because of the contract probably. And they will, if he doesn't play better and they can't, you know, part ways with him, you know, right before the trade deadline, best believe they're going to try to do something before the draft to move him if he doesn't play better. So I just look at it different. I think when you are in Cam's position, and you, because you're looking at it from a 10,000 foot view, and you see the moves that they're making and how they can potentially help the team. You are moving aging assets that still may garner you something, but you're moving them in order to get younger, stronger, faster, and better. Your rookie quarterback sees that. He's good with that. He knows that he knew when he got drafted that there may be some growing pains. He felt he could help them out of it. He felt, hey, listen, with me, it may not happen, but realistically, you're drafting number one. Why overall? Because you're a bad team. So he had to know coming in that this team wasn't good. But now he sees it all. And if he see upper management making moves, he look at it as, oh, we're trying to get better.
If they were 2-2, then I would feel a little different.
Yes.
Or even 1-3 and been right in the games, then I would be a little concerned about, hey, we're battling. You know, we're right in it, and you're trading these veterans that are helping keep us afloat. But they're 0-4. Like, I think he knows we have to get better, and this is how you get better.
You sit down and say, how do we get better as a team? Long term, as a head coach, GM, whatever Brinker's title is,
Supreme
ruler of football. There you go, and the quarterback. All four y'all are in lockstep mentally on how you're going to get this franchise, move it from where it's at now to a better place. Everyone should be thinking the same thing, and if trading an aging player on a roster that's 0-4 right now and doesn't seem like things are going to change drastically, I think as a young quarterback, you're looking and say, yeah, we got to do something. I understand why they're making the moves that they're making, because I don't want to sit in this space no longer than what I have to. So make all the moves y'all can make right now to get draft capital so we can get some young players in here to grow with me. Do that. If you don't do it, I'm looking at y'all like, why aren't y'all doing anything?
It's come to my attention. Mm-hmm. That John Robinson has posted on Instagram a happy birthday message to his wife. I would like to read that message. Quote, happy 46th B-Day to my best friend of 26 years. Love you, babe. And I guess it's still my fault. Hashtag we ass. If you know, you know.
See?
Three crying emojis. Crying laughing emojis.
See that right there. And boy, oh boy, John Robinson probably loved that. He was like, ooh, I get a little pop shot right now. That right there, that is people. That is why I don't fault John Robinson, because, hell, there must have been something that went on that they would never, at least no time soon, he may tell it later, but it was more than just, okay, we're losing, you're fired, because of the way it happened. So now he's taking little, you know, subtle shots here and there. So there may be a flood of things coming out pretty soon here. I don't know. But when you are a leader, this is what I go back to. Words mean everything. Because now this has become a hashtag, a meme. Everybody's using it. So there you go.
Let's go to Steve in Nashville on our phone line. Steve, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just want to raise up a point. Maybe you guys can, I don't know, Derek, maybe you can feed into this a little bit, but I know you guys are talking about making these roster moves, and I can see why. You know, we need help, but I'm wondering, do you need to have some sort of identity or some kind of something in mind of what kind of identity you want your team to have before you start making these moves, or is that something that's just sort of self-generated as we move along, you know?
That's a good question. Thank you, Steve. I have no idea what the Tennessee Titans' identity is.
Nobody does.
But I think,
and that's a problem,
from what everybody is saying and inferring or deducing, one or all of the above, depending on your perspective, right? I don't know if deducing.
That's how. There we go.
A small bell,
yeah,
right?
Not a big. But it's a bell. But
deducing,
it's a bell.
That wasn't like a big time word.
Yeah.
But the Brownlee trade tells you that something was going on with the identity, the culture, and he wasn't fitting. And unfortunately, Callahan had to dance around it and didn't do a very good job of it. But if Borgonzi or Brinker were being held to the fire or were willing to be open, I think they would admit that's the only reason you would give him away, because they, as a talent, he has some. He's your starter. And there wouldn't be any other reason why you would trade him other than you're trying to build an identity.
This is, the more and more I think about it, this is one reason why I am disappointed in upper management, meaning GM, really GM and supreme ruler of football, is that you gave Brian Callahan, let's just say, 5 hours to come up with an answer because you knew it was going to be asked. You gave him that. You gave him 5 hours, whatever it is. But you get a whole 2, 3, 4 months to come up with it, whatever excuse you're going to come up. Because the question is going to be asked of you when you decide to talk, Brinkert or Borgonzi. And it's going to be, why did you trade a young guy that seems to be
starter,
a guy that has some potential, a guy that can, you know, moving forward, be one of the cornerstones of your defense. Yes, he had to get away from the hold, and I get that, but he was a good player. Great player? No. Good player? Yes. Yes. So you traded you chose to trade him away, and then instead of y'all giving answers, you sent a coach to go out there to get answers, and it just went left. But you get a whole 2 or 3 months to come up with your answer that's going to end up being a non-answer anyway. That's the part that I'm disappointed. You sent your coach out there just like you sent Vrabel out there. Let Vrabel handle it. Let Brian Callahan handle the trading of a young player that has some potential. That's the part that I'm disappointed with.
And I'll remind people for context, for reference, Floyd Reese, for years and years, as long as he was the GM in this city, came on the flagship radio station, which I was a part of for a long time, every Friday for an hour, took questions from the fans. Every Friday for an hour. And we have this, oh my gosh, I don't think I can go talk to the media after a trade?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's the last couple of GMs now. Like Robinson was more accessible. Carthon ran and hid and got skewered as he should have. And now Borgonzi seems to be in the same kind of mode of, I don't need to talk. I'm going to let the coach who was out on the firing lines every week taking all of the shots, and he's going to take it alone. Mm-hmm. I don't get that. You don't have to go on the air every Friday for an hour, but when you make a trade, go out and explain to the fans, who the media is your conduit to the fans. Explain what you're doing. You don't have to give everything. Floyd Reese was on for an hour every week. Do you think he unveiled secrets he didn't want known?
No.
But he was as open as he could be. He was accessible. He communicated. That's what you need. The question was about identity. That's part of your identity, is how you come across. What is your position with the fans? The Titans do not care about that. It's obvious that they don't. The top doesn't care, and their management doesn't care. They'll put it all on the coach because it's like, oh, yeah, we'll let him take 100% of the heat, even though the roster stinks. And it's not all on Borgonzi. He didn't draft these guys. But help the messaging. Mm-hmm. Help communicate with your fans. It's brutal.
It is true that Mike Borgonzi and Chad Brinker have not taken as much heat as Rand Carthon did in regards to addressing reporters. That was one of the biggest criticisms of Rand Carthon. He did not hold news conferences. He made the unforced error of doing that interview with the Tennessean after the blowout loss to the Lions. That's where the infamous "the ball didn't bounce our way" quote came from, if you may recall. And there was no audio of that interview, so we just had to take it by what was written in the Tennessean. But you're right, Willie. You're absolutely right. You know, I think that when you trade Jarvis Brownlee, who had his warts as a player, but was starting for your team, when you trade him out of nowhere for effectively nothing, because what is the value of a sixth round pick, really?
Nothing.
But it's not even just it's they traded the seventh to get the sixth, so they're just moving up however many slots the seventh and the sixth are. It's a X amount of slots.
Yeah, they just
at the bottom
picks,
of the draft. So it's even less than the value of a sixth round pick.
One texter, Eli, says the GM is giving a perception of apathy, which is the worst thing you can do. It will alienate the fans and they will revolt. I'm not sure Mike Borgonzi is apathetic. And look, Mike Borgonzi has done a handful of news conferences. He says absolutely nothing. I'm not sure how much value there is, but you still do need to go up there and say something. One texter says the Titans should take tips from the Predators from this perspective. Barry Trotz is very open to talking to the media. To your point, Willie, about the late Floyd Reese, I don't know how many NHL general managers sit down with the flagship radio station on a weekly basis like Barry Trotz does, which he will start doing on Tuesday at 5 o'clock on this show right here. But I get that point. Mike says, Mike Borgonzi, you go. Chad Brinker, no, you go. Never mind. Let's just send Callahan. I know what you are, but what am I? I'm not quite sure I get all of that. Matt said, did Floyd do the hour?
It's PB Herman.
Yes. I don't have a secret word, though.
Hell yeah.
Did Floyd do the hour every Friday for free?
I don't know.
I'm not sure what difference that makes. It was with the flagship station. He was from 5 to 6 with George Plaster and I and Darren McFarlane. He took phone calls. We screened the phone calls to make sure it was a legitimate person and not somebody who was going to, say bad,
rail on him.
But we didn't screen and say, what is your question for the coach? You have a question for the GM? Yes. Like, he would answer whatever questions came his way. It wasn't, and by the way, he was on, when I went to the station that was the flagship at the time, it was 2003, so it was at the end of the great run. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like everything was hunky-dory, because he went on every Friday in 2004 when it all crumbled, yes. And then 2005, and that was a total rebuild. In 2006, he was there whether times were good or times were bad. So it can be done. And even Mike Reinfeld, his successor, continued on. Were they paid? I don't know the answer. Maybe they were given something from the flagship to do it, but still, they're doing it. It's like a coach that does a weekly radio show, a college football coach. That's something that they get paid for. But they stand in front of there and they take the questions.
It has been brought to my attention that Floyd Reese did get paid. It was part of his contract.
I'm sure. But what honestly, what difference does that make?
None. Because my thing is, it would be great if...
And I'll take it further. When I was on the radio station, that was not the flagship. In the years leading up to when I joined the flagship, he often came. It wasn't weekly, but he came on all the time. Jeff Fisher came on all the time. If we requested, he came out there. And they talked about... They were not shy at communicating why they did things. They would answer the questions.
And that's the only thing I want from him.
Yeah, I asked the question, what difference does it make whether he's paid or not?
You just need to be there when there's when something big happens in an organization, a move like that, I consider big because he's been a starter for a year and a half for you, a season and a half. When something big comes out like that or happens like that, you as the GM needs to be in front, or you as the supreme ruler of football need to be in front, because I guarantee you, if it was bringing in, let's just say, Jefferson from Minnesota, you made a blockbuster deal for you. I guarantee you, all of y'all, Brinker and Borgonzi, y'all would be right in front of that camera answering questions.
One texter says, I would just settle for a public apology from Amy Adams Strunk for driving this franchise off a cliff. Don't hold your breath, texter. 615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on the Titans. But coming up next, a massive college football game this Saturday as Vanderbilt takes on the Alabama Crimson Tide. We will dive into that matchup coming up next, 615-737-1025. Our show is proudly presented by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think. with Bax Homeworks. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com. D-Mace, Fingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. That's the good stuff. I mentioned the Goofy movie earlier, and David Janes delivers. Shout out, Powerline, Tevin Campbell as Powerline in the Goofy movie. If you haven't seen it, it's a fabulous movie.
One of the best.
One of the best. Anyway, we know there is a huge college football game on the horizon involving the Vanderbilt Commodores. They head to Alabama this Saturday afternoon, 2:30 p.m. on ABC. And, of course, you can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. Last I checked, Alabama is favored by 10.5. As you know, probably, College Game Day will be at Tuscaloosa for this game. Vanderbilt's second ever College Game Day appearance, the first since 2008. By the way, this is Alabama's 61st appearance on College Game Day. College Game Day, excuse me.
Wow.
So 61 for Alabama, 2 for Vanderbilt. Two for Vanderbilt. But Vanderbilt won.
61-2.
Who are you doing there?
Somebody from New York, I guess.
Oh, okay. What does that have anything to do with this?
Well, the pointing out how routine it is for Alabama to be on game day.
Yes,
and
I just don't know what accent right. That was.
I was being a New York guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It didn't land right.
The New York guy talking about Alabama Vandy.
This is live radio.
Yeah. Yes.
Live radio. Not everything right. Goes.
Hey, everything doesn't land right.
It was funny in my own mind. My truth
and
is that
is
was
all
funny.
That matters, Willie.
I laughed in my head.
I wasn't sure if that was like some deep cut from The Godfather or something that you were trying to do.
And what made it even worse, Adam was like, so what was that?
What was that? I usually roll with the punches, but
that
stopped me.
Funny?
That stopped me in my tracks. Nevertheless, Alabama, 61 appearances on College Game Day. Vanderbilt, 2. Mm. But Vanderbilt did win its previous appearance on College Game Day. I don't think Alabama is undefeated on College Game Day.
Oh, no.
But Vanderbilt is at 1-0. If you recall, over the summer, Alabama wide receiver Ryan Williams, in discussing this game, I believe with John Gruden, said, quote, "We're going to kill an ant with a sledgehammer when Vanderbilt visits Alabama." So Vanderbilt has been playing exceptionally well. We know that. We talk to Clark Lee every Monday. The team is 5-0. The team is averaging 49 points per game. They are the fourth highest scoring offense in the country. Their offense is rolling. Their defense is holding up. So Vanderbilt certainly has a chance at Alabama. But here's my question. Let's start with Coach Willie himself, the proud Vanderbilt alum. I'm wondering if the Commodores, and this is meant to be no disrespect to Vanderbilt. As I just said, they're playing exceptionally well. But I'm wondering if the Commodores can hang with the Crimson Tide without the element of surprise. Because I felt that was part of what happened last season. Nobody expected Vanderbilt to beat then number one ranked Alabama. But the secret is out about Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia. Vanderbilt's playing well. Alabama knows what to expect. So I'm wondering how that factors into this matchup, Willie.
I think it is a central question, probably more from Alabama's perspective, because last year when Alabama ascended to number one and Vanderbilt had lost to Georgia State, there is no question in my mind that Alabama was ambushed by Vanderbilt. They did not see the Pavia crew coming. They didn't see it, and they were down 14-0 before the seats were warm. Vanderbilt came in. It was like Rocky. When he first fought Apollo Creed and he lands the big punch and knocks him down in the first round, and everybody was like, Creed's never been knocked down before.
Do you have a Rocky impression for us? That's better than the one you did before?
No.
Think about it.
I'm not going to go there after I whiffed on the last one.
Adrian!
Not bad.
I do love that movie, though. I was thinking about a Rocky line, but I'll leave it at that. Creed is down. And by the way, one of the best things about Rocky is the announcers are so great in that fight. They really do sound like they're announcing something they haven't seen. It's not like scripted. But I think by the time Alabama got into the game and started playing well, Vanderbilt was able to hold them off, hold them off the entire game. And Vanderbilt was good enough to hold them off. I've seen teams come in flat against other Vanderbilt teams where Vanderbilt jumps out early, but by the end of the 60 minutes, Vanderbilt is just not good enough to hold off a top 10 team. So this year, once again, Alabama is coming off an enormous win against Georgia.
Just as they were a year ago.
Just as they were a year ago, but this one even had more, arguably even more significance because it was at Georgia, and it was also a prove it after they were drugged through the mud by their fans. And even after they beat Georgia, it was like, well, good for you. Thank goodness you didn't go 2-2. Saban's teams never went 2-2. You know, there are so much there are so many expectations there. And now, after Vanderbilt comes in there, they are at Missouri, and then they have Tennessee at home. Two enormous games. So I think last year what happened, they overlooked Vanderbilt, they got burned because Tennessee was on the horizon, et cetera. And maybe the glow of being number one was too much. So Vanderbilt is not going to sneak up on them whatsoever. And then add on top of it, Diego Pavia's disposition, his personality, which is to not run from that, not hide in the weeds, but he is coming out and saying, yeah, I think we can beat him again, right? Mm-hmm. So that's going to make the round. So just in case they didn't know it already, Diego Pavia is reminding them of what happened last year. So it's going to be great theater. And they are going to have to beat them straight up and on the road and as a 10.5-point underdog.
Yeah. Listen, this is what the big question was coming into the season. It was as big as day, as big as that new stadium is going to be off the Cumberland or off 65, however you want to say it. Can Vanderbilt repeat or even do better than what they did last season? Can they catch people off guard again? Or now that they are not catching people off guard, can they straight up beat teams now? Because everybody now knows Vanderbilt's a good team. First test, Virginia Tech. At Virginia Tech, Blacksburg. Is that what it is?
Blacksburg.
Blacksburg,
correct.
Virginia. They put it to Virginia Tech. Wasn't even a game, really.
They laid the smack down on the
hook. They said, okay, it was Virginia Tech. It was Virginia Tech,
y'all. Coaches on the hot seat.
Yeah, coaches on the hot seat. Well, wait, they got to go to South Carolina. They got to go to South Carolina. That's going to be their test. South Carolina knew they were coming in. South Carolina knew what type of team Vanderbilt was. And they put the smack down on South Carolina. I get it. South Carolina quarterback got hurt. But even before that, I thought Vanderbilt was going to win the game. Vanderbilt seemed like the better team. They overcame that. Someone that knew they were coming but just couldn't stop it. Alabama knows Vanderbilt's coming. Can Alabama stop what Vanderbilt is doing? Because people just think, oh, Vanderbilt can't stop Alabama. That's what people are thinking. Vanderbilt can't stop. As good as Vanderbilt's defense have been at points this season, pretty much all season, people still don't think that that Vanderbilt's defense can stop Alabama. They're Vanderbilt. They can't stop Alabama. Whoa. Can Alabama stop Vanderbilt? They didn't show they could stop them last year. And frankly, Alabama really hadn't shown they could stop too many people this season. I know they had a great game last week against Georgia. But they haven't proven that they are that dominant defense once again. They're a good team. They're going to remain a good team. They may even make the playoffs. But let's ask the question, can Alabama stop Vanderbilt's high-powered offense? That's what we should be asking and trying to figure out. So I think Vanderbilt has shown, I don't know if they're going to win this game or not. I'm going to pick them to win, but that just because I'm picking them doesn't mean they're going to win. But I think Vanderbilt has shown that, listen, we at the table, you know, we may not be at the top at the first three or four seats or five seats, but we at the table now. And y'all recognize us now. Now y'all got to come out. Y'all better come out with your A game, because if you don't, you have no chance at winning.
as you were discussing Vanderbilt, not to pick on Willie's impressions again, but I was thinking of Willie last year going, oh, Vanderbilt. How could you lose to Vanderbilt?
You can't lose to Vanderbilt. You got to beat Vanderbilt if you want to win the SEC.
By the way, one texter asks, what was the line last year going into the Alabama game? Last year, the line closed Alabama minus 22.5, according to ESPN Bet. So Alabama was a big favorite in that game. At the moment, it's 10.5 on ESPN Bet. 615-737-1025. Did you have something you wanted to
add? Yeah, I think as far as the X and O, one thing I'm really curious. Last year, Vanderbilt had more limited weapons. They had Stowers. They had a younger Junior Sherrill. They had a younger Cedric Alexander. But they didn't have the array and the versatility in the skill positions that they've added this year. So they're bringing more to the table. But I think maybe the biggest difference is their offensive line. Their offensive line is much better than it was last year. And even last year, when they needed to run the ball, they ran the ball very effectively. For example, at the end of the game, I don't know if I've ever seen a Vanderbilt team in a four-minute drill, you need two first downs to run the clock out, and if they didn't, they were going to have a lot of trouble stopping Alabama. I was just thinking, oh boy, they're just going to go into a shell, they're going to run it three times and punt, and then they're going to hang on for dear life. No, they ran out the clock. So that, to me, is going to be a key stat. Can they run the ball with consistency, whether it's Pavia or the way they creatively set things up to run it and set up their passing game? Georgia ran for 227 yards last week. Alabama got key stops at key times. Georgia dropped a touchdown pass that was wide open. A true freshman should have had it. There was a key fourth down stop where Georgia decided to go for it, and Alabama made the stop. I'm just excited just to see, can Vanderbilt bring down there what they've been doing to all their opponents so far, which is running consistently, protecting their quarterback, and being able to run their stuff.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on Vanderbilt's matchup at Alabama on Saturday afternoon, featured on College Game Day. Can the Commodores hang with the Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa without the element of surprise that seemed to catch Alabama off guard 1 year ago? 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, talking Vanderbilt, Alabama, 2:30, ABC, Saturday, College Game Day. Vanderbilt's second ever College Game Day appearance, Alabama's 61st.
And what is that? What is Vandy's record?
1-0.
Yes. They haven't lost, Willie.
A 1,000 winning percentage.
Mm-hmm. I like those odds.
Mm-hmm.
1-0. One texter says, since we're referencing movies today, I have another Disney one for you. Freaky Friday. Alabama's going to wake up and realize they've changed spots with Vanderbilt in the SEC. So who's
like
Lindsay
that.
Lohan and like who's that. Jamie Lee Curtis in this scenario? I don't know. Diego Pavia had a quote to Chris Lowe of On3 that has been making the rounds now. Admittedly, I do not subscribe to On3, so I haven't been able to read the whole story. So I'm just going off of the pull quote. Diego Pavia to Chris Lowe on Playing at Alabama, quote, "The crowd, I think, is going to be a big factor in the game, but we just got to play within the white lines. If we do that, if we play our game, it won't be close," end quote. Coach Willie, your thoughts?
Wow. Coach Willie almost wanted to run out the room. Coach Willie almost
Coach Willie threw up
room.
In his mouth
Man.
A little bit yeah. here.
You know Coach Willie.
He passed out right for
does
a quick
not
second.
Endorse that.
It won't be close.
Willie was like,
Do not endorse that. But it is on brand for
yes.
Mr. Pavia. And I believe Coach Clark Lee is a little closer on the spectrum to Coach Willie than he is to Diego being Diego. But he is. But the important thing that he has said is, I've got to let him be himself, and this is what you have to take.
Clark, if he had hair, he wouldn't have hair.
So
after this,
what the you know? I will rationalize it this way. Coach Willie still would say, "Don't do that." Right? if I were to advise him, I wouldn't have done that. But look, he was going to get 100% of that crowd and that team's attention, whether he said that or not. So why not just go?
go full-fledged, man. Just throw it all in. The kitchen sink, too. Might as well say it all.
Yeah. But he leans into it. This is part of what makes him really good, is he – this is just what he does. He leans into this whole thing.
And the one question we had about Pavia in the offseason, he was at the SEC Media Days. Chase and Big Joe were there. Chase used the term rock star to describe Diego Pavia. Everybody wanted a piece of Diego Pavia. And we all wondered, now that Diego Pavia is out there, and the SEC knows what to expect from Diego Pavia, how will he respond? And he's been great. He's been great.
He's improved.
Six touchdowns last weekend. Five passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown. He has improved. So I don't think the moment is going to be too big for Diego Pavia. He has engineered multiple double-digit upsets in terms of the line of the game, not just at Vanderbilt. Prior to coming to Vanderbilt, he may be the king of this sort of game. So I have zero concerns about Diego Pavia meeting the moment. I also don't have any concerns about the program meeting the moment in terms of the emotional atmosphere, the charged atmosphere. I mean, a game at Alabama, a game on College Game Day at Alabama is always going to be a big deal. But when you factor in what happened a year ago, those fans are going to be even more hyped for this game. And the vibe I get from talking to Clark Lee every week, and Willie, you would know this better than I do, you're closer to the school, obviously, is I just don't get the sense that this is a team that is going to shrink in this moment. I think they are going to handle, even if they lose, I think they're going to handle it well.
Look, he could go in there and play a bad game, and they could go in there and have a bad start. That absolutely could happen. But the track record, and I will use at Virginia Tech, at South Carolina, those were raucous atmospheres. Last year, they went to Missouri, a raucous atmosphere, after they lost to Georgia State, and they took them to double overtime. They went to Kentucky on a Saturday night and won after they beat Alabama, and everybody was singing their praises. They went to Auburn and won. So they have been to some of the really tough atmospheres, and they have not wilted there. So their track record suggests that they are capable of handling a hostile environment, and it is going to be a very hostile environment.
Tommy on our text line says, as a Vols fan, it's nice to see Vandy relevant. But I was at that game last year. Bama overlooked Vandy and still had every chance to win. I think Bama is pissed and will smoke Vandy on Saturday by 20+. All right, Tommy.
It could happen. But I would take issue with they had every chance to win. Vanderbilt led all the way. They never relinquished the lead. And I don't think Alabama ever had the ball with a chance to take the lead after they fell behind 14-0. I could be wrong, but I don't think that was the case. We can check that. But that's neither here nor there. His point is well taken. If Vanderbilt lets their guard, and the fact that they're a 10-point underdog suggests that the nation is still not sold.
The jury is out.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Or that they think that Alabama is still Alabama after the way they have rebounded from a loss that had everybody buzzing and worried that they had step down a notch or two after losing to Florida State the way they did.
I'm going to look to answer your question, but I'm looking at the box score from last year's game. This is an insane number. Time of possession in the game last year. Vanderbilt, 42 minutes, 8 seconds. Alabama, 17 minutes, 52 seconds.
Part of that was Alabama was whipping down the field so quickly and scoring so quickly, and Vanderbilt was doing what they have always done with this offense, and that's grind out 10 yards at a time. But D-Maze, you've mentioned it. They are scoring. They're getting more explosive plays now. They have a different level. They have different layers to them this year that they didn't have last year.
Yeah, they're not the same old Vandy. They're not even a Vanderbilt of last year, which I thought was a good team. This is a better team. Now, you know, each and every week, presents his own problems in your opponent. So if they go out here and they lose to Alabama, that doesn't make me think now Vandy isn't a good team. I think Vandy is a much better team than they what they were last year, because they got a lot of guys that are returning from a team that experienced some success, and they know what it looks like, they know what it tastes like, they know what it smells like. So they want it continuously now, and they've gotten it up until this point. So I understand why Willie is a little apprehensive. He's a Vandy grad, and he's tempered in you know what's going on with Vandy. But I'm looking at this from a standpoint of Vandy beat them last year. They beat them. Alabama fans, UT fans that are sitting on the sideline right now, Vandy beat them. I don't want to hear this. Well, Alabama had to. No, Vandy did what they needed to do, and they beat them. They were the better team that day. And since then, I believe if you look at the makeup of the team, they've been a better team than Alabama since then, I believe, in my mind. Does the record bear it out? No, it doesn't. But if you've seen how this team has grown from last year to this year and what they're doing this year, there's a reason why, you know, I think if the only reason this is a 10-point spread is because Alabama beat Georgia. And if those that are out there saying, well, Alabama had their chances to win and they gave it to Vandy. Well, Georgia gave it again to Alabama last week. They gave it to them. You score that touchdown, you probably win that game. But you dropped the pass. So you gave it to them. 4th and 1. Inches. You didn't make it. So the same thing that people are saying about Vandy against Alabama, I could say about Alabama against Georgia, which tells me I still believe Vandy's the better team this year right now. It may change as the season continues to go, but Vandy, to me, is the better team.
I think there's still a perception, and this is what I think a little bit of the betting line is based on, that just the image, the prestige, the track record of Bama and the track record of Vanderbilt, which is the polar opposite, does affect the betting line. Mm-hmm. The question is, when they line up, how much has Vanderbilt closed the gap?
I wonder because, if the line's going to move.
Well, it hasn't yet. And last, what was it? The South Carolina, wasn't that the one that really
I want to say it got down to like 4.5.
It got down to 2.5.
2.5, oh.
And it started at, I don't know, 5.5, something like that.
6.5.
And that hasn't happened here. Mm-hmm. But look, we know Alabama has got the top level of recruit, the top level of resources. So that is going to give them a real advantage. But Vanderbilt, I think, has brought a lot more to the table than they have in a long, long time when they go to Tuscaloosa.
Let's quickly get through your text here before we get to Jonathan Hutton. One texter says, I'll take Vandy by a touchdown. I like the underdog in this game. Let's see if anybody takes that game and silly underdog picks coming up in about 25 minutes. One texter says, Bama under Saban wins this game by 2 touchdowns or more. This isn't the same Bama, and this isn't the same Vanderbilt, expecting a 4-quarter game. Tommy, who said that he thinks that Bama is going to smoke Vandy by 20-plus, does say he would like to see Vandy win. But Jacob from Murfreesboro is coming after Tommy. Says, I'm not going to sit here and act like Vandy getting shoved in the locker by Alabama would bother me, but these Vols fans saying they're rooting for Bama are brain dead. Real Vols fans were raised to root for 2 teams, Tennessee and whoever's playing Alabama. Wake up, Vol Nation.
Vol Nation, is he right? That's all I want to know.
And we'll end on this with Josh from White House. There is a difference between confidence, cocky, and psychotic, and I'm not sure which one Diego Pavia is yet.
All three.
But that's why he is such a popular figure in this town.
And now the whole country is going to see him on the big stage. And let's see what he brings to the table.
Hey, is Pavia, I know I asked this question before, and quickly I'm going to say it. Is Pavia the most popular athlete in the state of Tennessee right now?
In the state of Tennessee?
Yes.
I don't know.
Only because Tennessee fans outnumber Vanderbilt fans by so much. I just don't
think. If you just said,
within Nashville.
If you just say,
you could make an argument.
If you based it by number, like, don't take. Because obviously UT's fan base is much bigger. But per per whatever.
Per capita?
Per capita, yes. I know UT's fan base is much bigger. But I would tend to believe. Let's take away.
Popularity per fan?
Yeah,
per 60.
Derek, why don't you formulate that thought, yes. and we'll get Jonathan Hutton to weigh in on it as well, because I think Hutton will have a good perspective on it. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick will join us next. 615-737-1025. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinge, 1025 The Game.